Hey, want to learn hypnosis? One of my favorite interviews I ever did was with Jonathan Royal, who is a wonderful, wonderful entertainer and hypnosis trainer. A lot of people recommend going through his trainings. There is a link in the show notes for you to sign up for Time Transformation Therapy Master Practitioner with Mind Hacks to the Future. This is about creating the life you always desired. It's a live online Zoom event, the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th of this March. Most hypnotist trainings, they go for $2,000 at least, even the Zoom ones. This is a 4-day event, live online Zoom. I've seen the other live trainings Jonathan's done on Zoom recently, and let me tell you, he goes above and beyond, stays late with you, answers questions, really wants to give. And you also get access to the Elite Hypnosis Bootcamp, which he was on my show last year talking about it. Nobody has risen to the challenge yet of having a more complete training. No one said, I have a more complete training. You get 16 top-rated experts in their fields teaching everything from past life regressions to virtual gastric band hypnosis, NLP. Jonathan Royal's training, people rave about it. I've gone through it. There's some great stuff in there. So the fact that you get this training that normally retails about $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, actually more unless you have the discount, but the fact that you get this as part of this training that is less than $500, it's amazing. Sign up at the link at the show notes for Jonathan Royal's Time Transformation Therapy Master Practitioner Training coming this March. You there? You know who I'm talking to, not you. I'm talking to you. Your unconscious mind is now tuned in to its favorite late night talk show for the Shamelessly Fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hey everybody. Hello. It is I, Greg, the Bornstein. You ready to loop? I'm your consciousness disruptor, your cultural hypnotist, and chief looper. Yes, I am hosting this wild ride of a show because, what is an open loop exactly? We'll get to that in a minute. You see, my goal is to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and allow you to step into the highest version of yourself. We talk about weird things on this show. The supernatural, aliens, time travel, the paranormal, the conspiratorial, the secretive, and of course, the deepest questions of them all, who and what we really are. I gotta condense this intro. I'm getting sick of this intro. It's good for you to know what this show's about, but I'm sure if you read through the titles, if you are new to this show and you were to read through all the titles, at a certain point you'd go, oh, this guy's into the not normal things. I'm not sure you realize this, but it's pretty hard to explain this podcast to people. One of the worst questions I get is, what's your podcast about? That sends me on a spiral of unknowing, which in a way is what the best learning state possible could be. You'll understand what I mean in this episode, because the unknowing, the unconscious, that space where a new possibility within you can arise. That is where my guest, Rex Sykes, NLP Master Trainer, thrives. He's not just an NLP Master Trainer. NLP, of course, stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming, the modality that we've talked about so many times in the show, created by Richard Bandler and John Grinder, modeling excellence in human behavior. NLP is an offshoot of hypnosis, and Rex Sykes happens to be very skilled in all things personal change, transformation. He also happens to have a showbiz background too, acting, filmmaking. He's a consultant in the entertainment industry, and he's really good at what he does. I mean, really good. This episode? Okay, when I was first introduced to Rex Sykes at this seminar that I went to, it was an hour seminar, he was doing a talk. The man who introduced him, Jonathan Altfeld, said, "Some of you can just sit back and enjoy listening to this. Some of you will, at the NLP practitioner level, understand that there's certain patterns that he's throwing and certain language patterns and whatnot and metaphors that he's putting into the talk he's giving. And then some of you at the master practitioner level will go another layer deeper and understand the way the entire talk is constructed as an experience, a curated experience, if you will, designed to transform everyone in the room. They'll see the full picture." He does that in this podcast, though I decided to be the first category. I just wanted to sit along for the ride because it was transformative. The way he breaks down topics like accelerated learning and mastery and simply just having an attitude of joy about everything sounds difficult, but Rex makes it seem so natural, so organic. You ready to change? You will. He's also been getting a lot of praise for his book, Life on Your Terms, which, wow. Look, I mean, this guy, everybody in personal transformation has interacted with Rex Sykes, all the way up to Tony Robbins. Rex is a pro, and I am so honored he came on to change me and change you in the process. Now look, before we get into this interview, you can now subscribe to Open Loops on Spotify. You can now subscribe to Open Loops on Apple Podcasts. If you are looking to transform someone's life, make sure to share this episode, as well as if you can leave a quick rating for the show, couple words, review. Look, it just helps get this content out there. I really appreciate it. And the other thing I'll say is I've studied hypnosis for a while. I'm starting to work with people again. Confidence, weight loss, smoking, whatever you need, you can book a discovery call with me in the show notes if you wish. Happy to help out. Lights, camera, action. It's Rex Sykes. Rex Sykes, the master trainer of NLP in design human engineering, a master hypnotherapist and master hypnotist, whole brain and accelerated learning teacher, a law of attraction expert, and the founder of Idea Seminars. We were talking before this started. You said you didn't like the title of motivational speaker or personal development, but really, Rex, I mean, you've been there in this space for a long time, as well as in the entertainment space. We're going to get into how all of that intersects with each other and really, really is all held together for you. But before we do, Thanks so much for coming on Open Loops. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Greg. It's an honor. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be here with you. And we know each other from a little bit back a ways, a decade or more ago. So that's very cool to reunite in this way now. I appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that when I saw you, so you're doing this seminar on being a super learner. And back then, I think it had a great title. It was about how to become a super learner. It had like a kind of bombastic, classic, what you would get in a great sales letter, kind of like I sat there and went, oh yeah, I am fascinated by accelerated learning. And I was very interested at the time. I really wanted to learn about, I was interested in NLP, I was interested in hypnosis, but all of a sudden when you start reading books on mind technologies and they're saying, and this stuff can help you learn it, I started going, well, if I'm going to learn this, then I should learn it in an accelerated way so that I can get the most out of it and retain it. So then I became obsessed with accelerated learning. And then I went to your seminar and I remember going, in a way, I didn't really get it. Because what you said at the time that I recall was that this was the weird thing, Rex. You definitely taught some great things. I mean, you talked about directed questions. You talked about a bunch of the things that are really mainstay things that you teach in elongated programs. But you were talking about how we're all natural learners. And then as I was sitting there waiting for you to give like these great techniques to speed read and memory and all this stuff, you didn't really do that at all. You just kind of, I mean, it was a very interesting seminar, but I also walked away going, I don't know, this is different than what I signed up for. You know, at risk of taking away some of the magic of what you were doing there, I am curious, what, do you still have the same view about learning? Or can you go into that a little more?
Oh, sure. Learning, you know, we are natural learners. I mean, that's what we do. We have evolved to learn and to become conscious and to be somewhat self-aware. I mean, you know, we have an awareness of ourselves that supposedly other creatures on the planet don't. And we can plan or intend to plan a future, and we can regret the past. There's things that we apparently do that, again, other creatures don't do. And all of that essentially is learned. When we come into the planet, we may have some DNA baggage, but most of it, and now what research indicates is that most of it really is nurture over nature, that there are some, you know, biological, like I said, biological baggage, and there may be some, you know, triggers that allow genes to move in one direction versus another direction. But essentially, everything you and I do is learned, from talking to writing to being able to sit upright, to being able to be mobile if we're mobile, to be able to make visual and auditory distinctions, or being able to look at things and, you know, and hear things. We've learned to be depressed and sad and angry and happy. We've learned to doubt ourselves and fear the future and be anxious about things or regret the past, none of which we're born with. But between the ages of 0 and about 8 years old, we are conditioned. And it sounds like people are doing this it's intentionally, and to some extent they are, but they're also products of conditioning. So it's just something that gets perpetuated and passed on. And I mean, more so than their genetic baggage in many ways, because, you know, we learn from our ancestors, and then, you know, those closer to us, and then our great grandparents and grandparents and the parents, and then we pass it on to our children and they to their children. And so, I mean, you can see that the biases and prejudices and talents and abilities and the way people are, you know, in families, that's truly an amazing thing. And it's acquired. We are between 0 and 8, really a sponge. We live in, for the first couple of years, primarily in the delta brainwave state, which is closest to sleep. That's why babies sleep an awful lot. And then we move more into the theta stage, which is what hypnotists will tell you is where we are when we're being hypnotized, essentially. We go from beta, which is normal waking consciousness, into alpha, which is where we're relaxing, and then it's the gateway into theta that ends up being where we go before we go into dreamland. So between delta and theta, we're just a sponge for what's ever happening. And it's not just the words, because we don't originally start out learning words. We learn sounds, we learn feelings, we learn vibrations, we learn by touch and being held, we learn by seeing smiles or being feared, we hear loud noises or people arguing, and we have responses. And what can we do? We can cry and babble and go, you know, I'm wet, I'm hungry, I'm scared, you know, hold me. And right. And we learn that we can communicate, but we also learn that the world is either a friendly place or a fairly hostile place in the early, and this starts actually in the womb, you know, because the fetus inside the womb can hear and sense what's going on. And the mother has either wonderful chemicals coursing through her body or stress chemicals, and they do both, right? So we're conditioned very early on, and then we learn language. We acquire language naturally as part of our evolution. We don't have to read a book on it, thank goodness, and we don't go to school to learn our first language, at least. And in a very early age, we can learn multiple languages more easily than later on. So it's, you know, I mean, just it's just amazing, right? We learn all this stuff. We hear no more than any other word, you know, in the English language, in the first 6 or 7 years of life. It's no, don't do that. No, don't do that. No, 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 no cookies. No, you know. And then we get to a point where it's like, you failed that course, you didn't get a grade on your paper, stop eating the cookies, who told you you could do that? You know, and so we're conditioned to have beliefs or attitudes or feelings about ourselves. We're taught that we're wrong, that we're not good, or all that. So we learn all this stuff. And mostly we learn that we're broken and not good. But the amazing part about all that is that we're truly amazing learners. We have learned all of this. So now fast forward, you're an adult, you go, oh, I want to learn how to learn. At the same time, during the childhood thing, once you became a toddler, you learned more through laughter and play and being curious and rolling around and frolicking. And nowadays, I mean, kids get, you know, electronics, but in the old days, you got a stick, you know, you went and played in the sandbox, you went outside and rode a tricycle or a bicycle, you used your body in different ways. And so you learned more through play and more through activity and more through interacting and not only just play, but playing literally games, whether it was football or a board game. You learned all sorts of social things. And then suddenly you were put in school and told you had to just memorize things and regurgitate it. And you passed or failed and you moved through it, and learning became a chore and it became a struggle. You either excelled at certain things or not. You either remembered things or you didn't, or you were really good at taking tests, which some people are, and other people are really bad at taking tests, but they actually know the material, you know? So, I mean, there's all this stuff, right? And then people come into a class and go, I want to learn to do this, and I want to learn to do that, and I want to learn to do this, and I want to learn to do that. Well, learning to do it isn't that difficult. For me, if you wanted a course on speed reading, we say, okay, well, here's a course on speed reading.
Right.
But this is a course on super learning, and how do you activate that natural ability that you have to learn? And one of the ways that you want to do that is to go back to that childlike innocence and that childlike state and start adding novelty in, because most of what we are since 7 or 8 are creatures of habit. This is why Aristotle said, show me a 7-year-old child, I'll show you the adult.
Wow.
So by 7, we've pretty much fashioned everything about us. I mean, we still go on, we still validate it or rethink it, but we are creatures of habit. Our brains have neural pathways that are laid down that are automatic and reliable and habitual, and they either serve you to do really wonderful things or they serve you to do things like be afraid and angry and hostile and hate and fear and doubt and all that. And all of those things also are human, so they're all good anyway, but they aren't always appropriately contextualized, meaning sometimes it's okay to be angry and say, damn it, I need that, give it to me now. You know, I'm not going to take this anymore, and you stand up for yourself. Another time it's nice to say, could you give me to that? You know, I'd really be happy if you gave me that, and you're very nice and pleasant. Yet wisdom is knowing which to do and not just finding yourself doing it as a reaction when you go, I really wanted to be nice to this person, but I got really, really mad. Because why? Because that's what the but that's what you learn to do.
Yeah. You know, Rex, this makes me think. I mean, go ahead. I was going to say,
so super learning is about more than just acquiring a good memory or learning how to speed read or do anything. It's learning how to change your habits and to accept yourself as an incredible learner. And if you realize that you're an incredible learner to begin with, then it's just a matter of choice. Which do you want to do more of? And if you're doing more of dog crap than diamonds, you have a choice to make. And then what I try attempt to do in teaching or talking about it is just to steer you to say, one, you're an incredible learner. You can do all these amazing things. You haven't even tapped into it yet, though, because you can do even more amazing things, but you have to choose which direction you're going to go in to make your life glorious or to live the way you have lived. If you don't like it, then change it. If you like it, fine.
Wow. Yeah. No, I think it's very it's a great message, and it's a great it's an empowering one. It makes me think about, you know, the person that you were doing the seminars with, Jonathan Altfeld, really renowned NLP trainer, and he came up with genius mapping, and he's really taken modeling to another level. I remember him before he introduced you. He said, I took my NLP practitioner training with Rex, and then I showed up to a Bandler seminar, and I think it was one of the introductory ones, and they said, and immediately they I knew more than most of the people who were doing master prac, like master practitioner level. Like, he said that the experience he got from the way you taught NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, for people that don't know, was really it really stuck, and it really got him those results. I'm curious, Rex, in terms of the way that you were running those seminars in those trainings, what do you think you did? What was it that made people really get it in a different way than perhaps other NLP trainers?
You got a month or two?
Oh, well, that's a good point.
In a nutshell, to make it as simple as possible, in most traditional learning, people think it's the information, and it's not information that changes you. I'm an actor. I've written a book, and I tell people, even when they would come to my seminars, or in the old days, people would say, you know, people wanted me to put out infomercials, or they wanted me to put out directed questions as a product. And I go, I don't want to make ready-made products. I don't want books, because people would come into the workshops being previously exposed to my articles or some of the books that were published or tapes and audios and things like that. And they would sit there waiting to hear something that they'd heard before. And then when they heard something before, they go, I remember that story. And they miss everything that I'm talking about, because they're so interested in being in that moment of remembering when, oh, I read that, I know that, I know this. And anytime you say, I know that, you already shut your mind down.
Oh.
So the job of, let's say, an instructor or a teacher or a modeler or an example of learning is one that wants to keep you open, not shut your mind down. We want you to go, not, oh, you know, we want you to go, this is wonderful, not, I got it. Because the second you say you got it, then it's like the door slams shut and you limit your possibilities. So if somebody says to you, here's what you should go do, what do you think about that? And you go, I understand. You don't. Because if you really understood, you wouldn't say, I understand. And yes, there's that double bind in communication where then what do you say? You say, okay, we'll do, you know, I'll go learn. I mean, because learning is about being open. So the difference between my programs and a lot of the other programs was this. People would come in and they would present things in an informational style, and they would say, here are the steps in which you do this. And then if you go step one, step two, step three, like here's a recipe, and they would pass out recipe sheets, and they would say, now do these things. Well, anyone can follow a recipe, but it takes a little bit of creativity and thinking to be a master chef. Because a master chef understands how flavors work together, how to present the food, what you should pair, what drink you pair. It's a larger set of skills than just being able to follow the rules or follow the steps in a recipe. So how do you get there? Well, you help people discover it. You don't tell it to them. You try and elicit it from them so that they go, and they start making connections on their own instead of you giving it to them. So as an actor, what I would do, people say, what's more important, the script or the actor? I mean, this is a huge question in the motion picture business, because without the screenplay, what does the actor do? Well, the actor could improv.
Yeah.
Because the screenplay is a script, you know, and then, but without the actor, what would the screenplay do? So I would take a script, I would throw it on the floor, and I'd go act.
Right, right.
And people, you know, it doesn't do anything. And the reason it doesn't do anything is because you have to apply it. And the same thing is if you read a book, if you take a program, you have to apply what you're learning. What happens with most people is they read a book and they finish it. They go, okay, good, I'm done, I got it. The way that you get to genius is to do it enough that you don't have to think about it anymore. So I use the analogy, and in my workshops, we were talking about why did people come away from my workshops knowing more or feeling better about their learning than other people. One is it's not just the information, it's not the recipe. I would teach juggling, for example. It's not only an analogy, but as a way of getting people to learn that they could learn something quickly. That if they, during the time that they were there, we would do, you know, they would juggle. They would also learn how to do directed questions. Before every workshop, we would do a directed question session. We'd do a good and new. We had morning rituals. We had laughter meditation. They would go out and roll down hills. We encouraged the full body experience. It was about playing and immersing themselves, not just about the material, but all the while they were playing and learning and immersing themselves, it was about the material. It was just hidden within the different things that I had them do. So when they would leave, they would leave having had the entire experience, plus the way I present, it's about framing and about exposing people to what they're going to learn. It's kind of like tell them what they're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. But there are multiple different ways of doing that. So there's pre-exposing people for what's coming. There's pre-exposing people for what's coming, then having that exposure, then after the exposure, kind of unpacking it for them, but never unpacking it so much that they go, okay, I've got it. Because you want to leave it open enough for them to still be making connections after you leave. So for
that's
example,
why we called it, that's what the name of this podcast is about. That's exactly a tribute
open
to
loop.
It.
So think about the tip of the tongue phenomenon. You go, oh my God, this person's name is, oh, what was his name? What was his name? And the more you try and get it, the harder it becomes, right? So you go, well, all right, forget about it. I go, oh, all right, whatever. And then a moment later, an hour later, a day later, you go, oh, that was Bob. And it drops in because the brain keeps working on it even after you consciously give up. So if you know how to direct the brain, if you know how to leave open questions or open loops, the brain will continue to do it. It's what the basis of what's called trans-derivational search.
Yes.
If I say, what's the capital of Arizona? And you say Flagstaff or Scottsdale or Phoenix or whatever the answer is, you're done. You don't have to go any further. But if I said, where did you get that shirt? You might say, I got it as a gift. I bought it from a particular store. I don't remember where I got it. I've had it in my drawer forever, but you come up with an answer and you don't have to think about it anymore. But if I say, how delighted will you be to discover the many talents that you have available to you that you've never realized? You don't know.
Right.
And what did I ask you about?
You asked me about my talents, things that, and how delighted I'm going to be when I discover them.
Discover the talents you don't know that you have. So think about that for a second. I'm not asking you, do you have talent or not? I'm assuming you already have talent. I'm saying, how delighted are you going to be to discover the talents that you're not right now aware of? So there's talents you're not aware of that you will discover. And the question isn't whether or not you discover them, it's how delighted are you going to be in discovering them?
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you something about that, actually, because I'm curious this must have happened to you. Has anybody ever come to you and gone, okay, Rex, I get it. I love the presupposition in there. But what happens if my brain is telling me that presupposition isn't real, that I don't have the talent, that I'm not going to discover it? It will. Okay.
It will. I mean, it will. But if you ask a question, and if you keep asking a question sincerely, and playfully, then you're bypassing that. If you said, I am talented, your brain is more likely to go, no, you're not.
Right, right. Yeah, if that's your thing about affirmations. I love your talk about affirmations.
Yeah, but if you go, could I discover that I'm talented and that I don't realize it yet? Yeah, probably. Okay. It's creating an opening. It's not that you ask one magic question. This is where everybody gets everything. They want that one magic bullet that solves all of life. They don't want to take the time to ever do anything. Like they, you know, that's why we have microwaves, right? So we could reduce the amount of time, or why we have fast food to reduce, and things happen in their own time. And that's something that's truly important to know, because if you ask yourself, am I stupid? Your brain will go, sure, here's why. And it'll tell you all the different reasons, or many different reasons, why you're stupid, or why you're broken, or why you don't have anything, or why you should have, excuse my language, but why things happen to you and it shouldn't, and all that kind of stuff. So you say, I'm going to change. I'm going to affirm the opposite. I am talented. I am smart. I am. And your brain goes, no, you're not.
Yes, right.
All right. So what's happened is habit of finding the bad overrides the trying to assert the good. Why is that? Because the brain has been conditioned, but also in our own evolution, our brain does really two things, maybe three things really well. One is it's designed to keep you alive and to look out for threats. Now, some people say it has a negativity bias. I think that's bullshit. It has a survival bias. So it looks for those things that it perceives as threat. That's not negative. You know, before people were on the planet, it wasn't negative that there were fires or earthquakes or lightning storms. It is to people, because we go, well, it damages our property or results in the loss of human life. So we consider it a negative experience when really it's just an experience. Humans add the interpretation to it or the judgment to it. Getting beyond that judgment is sometimes difficult for people, including themselves, which was your point, where they say, well, I say this, but I'm not talented. They have a judgment about themselves.
Yeah,
it's locked in, it's conditioned, they've repeated it, they've thought it all their whole life, and now they try and do something different. The brain has essentially the ability to keep you alive and to thrive. That's all it's programmed to do, keep you alive and to thrive. And how it does that is to keep you consistent and to look out for danger. Now, since we have evolved a thinking cap and we have evolved as a species, in theory, you know, or in practice, what happens is we now perceive somebody looking at us askance, askew, as a potential threat. The sound of someone's voice becomes a potential threat.
Right.
You know, go clean your room. Somebody, you know, because we've been yelled at, we've been told, we've been bad. We, you know, this is all stuff. So the brain goes, okay, this is danger. And it reverts to what it knows. That is, keep the person consistently the same. So whatever you've learned, if you've learned you're stupid, it'll say, I'm stupid. And you'll say, no, I'm smart. And it'll go, no, I'm stupid. And you'll go, no, I'm smart. And it'll go, no, I'm stupid. Because in order for it to say, I am smart, you have to train it to be, I am smart. It's not what our prime programming was. So I'm kind of ahead of myself here, but the best way to do that is to, one, be able to release and let go. And you can say, well, how do you do that? But let's just go through the thing first. Release and let go, forgive and forget. Just go, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm going to release it. I'm going to let it go. Just the fact of saying, I feel like I'm going to release this is a step. So if you're angry or you feel I'm stupid, you go, well, let me release that. Could you release stupid? The answer is, yeah, I probably could. Then you're on your way. You may not have done it completely. You may have to do it 100 times, but you're on your way because you've expressed the possibility. Now, I learned to ride a horse when I was young. Not very well, but I learned to ride a horse. I was about 24, 25 when I got a movie role where I had to, come on, Bailey, where I had to ride really well. And it was stunt riding. And so they paid lots of money and paid me to get trained by one of the premier best horse wranglers in Hollywood at the time. And I spent days, hours on a horse, day in, day out, for about 6 months, a little longer actually, learning how to do all sorts of incredible things on these exquisitely trained animals. And the more trained that they are, the more difficult they are to ride, the better rider you have to be. Because if you lean a particular way, that's a command to the horse. If you lean the other way, it's a command to the horse. If you squeeze your knees here or you squeeze your knees there, it's a command to the horse. If you lay in your raise this way or that way. So if you squeeze this way and move that way and do that, and you don't know what you're doing, you confuse the horse.
Yeah.
So you have to train yourself to know exactly what you're doing so that you communicate that to the horse, who's got all these stunt commands and all these things that the horse has been trained to do. And if you don't know what you're doing and you're flopping around on the horse, the horse is like going, I don't know what you want me to do. I'm just going to, you know, and it kind of freaks the horse out. So you have to become a good rider to ride a really good horse. Not because the horse doesn't like you, but because the horse is so sophisticated that if you don't know what you're doing, the horse won't know what to do. Yeah. If you know what you're doing, then the horse will do it. So, and here is in the lesson. The horse is your subconscious mind. If you give us a stable nag, you know, when you go to the park, you know, where the kids are or things like that, and they put them on a pony and it runs around in a circle and it comes back. If you don't know how to ride a horse, here's what's going to happen. The stable nag will take you around and it'll bring you back and the ride will be over, or it won't move and you'll be stuck where you are. Either way, you're stuck. You're either stuck going where the horse goes or you're stuck standing still. But if you know how to ride the horse, then you tell the horse where to go. And it's the same thing with the brain. If you are the kind of person who knows how to tell your brain what to do, then the brain will do it, because the brain is just a servant. It will do this or that. It doesn't care. Its only job is to keep you alive. It's been conditioned along a certain line, which is usually debilitating for most people. You know, they learn to feel bad, they learn to feel good, and they either live a mundane and okay life. Some people are conditioned to be more happy than other people, and they become free, and so they now know how to be more happy. But a lot of people, 97% of the people, will never make money to retire on. You know, they will die broke. They will never be as happy as they could be. They will be divorced multiple times. Why? Because they keep doing the same things over and over again that get them the results that they've gotten already, not the new things that they want to get. And the only way you get the new things that you want to get is to rehearse them and to practice and to train yourself. So your brain learns how to stay alive. I mean, that's what it's designed to do, how to make you thrive. It learns that there's dangers out there. And it will perceive you changing as a danger unless you teach it that it's okay. And if you teach it that, no, this is really cool. And how do you do that? Through your positive emotions.
Right. Right.
So if you're like, this is so thrilling, the brain goes, yes, it is. But you have to keep repeating it. It's not something that happens one time. Like think of this. You go into a gym, you pick up a dumbbell, you go, mwah.
Yeah,
it does nothing. You picked up the dumbbell once. In order to have a muscular bicep or tricep, you have to repeat that. And you can't just repeat it all in one day. It has to be over time. And guess what happens when you repeat that? You oxygenate the muscles, the tissues break down, and the blood flows back in, bringing nutrients to it, and it starts to grow. So there's this process of breaking down and releasing, and then adding in things, and then growth. And that's the way we grow. And that's the way our brain learns. And that's how we accelerate our learning, through play and through fun and through delight and through being open and through questions and through having a mystery, not getting information. You can get the information in the right order. And if you can't go beyond that, you will just be stuck with the recipe. So why did people learn better than in my classes? Because they weren't stuck with a recipe.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this. If you're stuck in a forest somewhere, you're lost in a forest, how do you get out of the forest? Well, one of the easiest ways to start to do it is to climb the highest tree or go to a mountaintop and look around and see if you can see the perimeter of the forest. Or if you see a pathway or a river or a way out. If you may not, but you're going up higher so that you can see further. If you're right there in front of the trees, you can't see anything. And people get caught up in this idea of the information and not getting up above it so that they can look at what to do with the information. Why do people, and here's the thing, NLP was traditionally taught was hypnosis of something you do to somebody else, where people got breakthroughs in my programs, where they said, forget about doing it for anybody else. That will come as a second part of the thing. Transform yourself, become the horseback rider. So that why are you learning this stuff? To have an exquisite life. I mean, why do you want to live? Do you want to live to just be mundane and okay? To just be mediocre? Or do you want to excel at stuff? Do you want to have fun? Do you want to have joy? Do you want to have deep, wonderful relationships? Or do you want to be cerebral about it and go, you know, I need to read another book on how to communicate better with other people, and then put the book down and say, yeah, I read that book 20 years ago, and then keep doing the things that you always did that haven't been working. Or yeah. Do you want to, you know what I'm saying? So the way I approached it was, why do you want to learn this stuff? And they go, well, I want, you know, and I'm like, that's all? Don't you want to have an enjoyable life? They go, yeah. I said, well, then let's go for all the gusto. You know, let's mine for the diamonds. Let's go for the gold. Let's not try these mediocre things where you get these little piecemeal things so that you now can call yourself a neurolinguistic programmer, because who cares what you call yourself?
Right. Right.
If you're not walking your talk, if you're not living a vibrant lifestyle, what difference does it make that you could do this thing? So, you know, but not everybody, you know, is willing to go that route. So you need to make it enticing. You need to make it fun. You need to make it safe, but challenging and stretching, you know, and not make it just about the information. And it's not just about the steps in the recipe. It's why are you making the cake in the first place? Well, we're going to have a birthday party, or I really want some tasty food. So there's a lot more into it than what a lot of other people do. And so it's where is your focus? My focus, and I've said this in every program, I don't want you to be a neurolinguistic programmer who can follow the steps. It's like, I want you to be a master chef. I want you to be a symphony conductor who knows how to put all these things together and create exquisite music. I want you to be a movie yes. director who is able to take, you know, sound and pictures and create emotional experiences for people so that you and they feel awesome when they're supposed to feel awesome. And if they feel tight and restricted and this kind of thing, you know how to alleviate that by creating something incredible. Do you know how, you know, people will say, I watched this scary movie and now I can't sleep. You know what you need to do?
What?
Turn on a comedy.
Right.
Watch a different movie. I mean, think about that. They the last thing they do before they go to bed is watch something they scare, and then they lie in bed going, I'm afraid. Well, then put on something funny or something romantic or something inspiring or something wonderful so that the last images are the images that you want to have.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't think that. They just sit there going, I'm scared. So I don't want them to be a carpenter with just the tools. You know, because anybody, you can have train a monkey to hammer a nail, but it takes a craftsmanship. You're like an architect who's able to draw a building and do all these incredible things using their imagination in ways that somebody who just got a bunch of tools isn't doing.
Yeah.
So I want them to go with the higher thinking skills, and the way that you do that is, I'll give you a little bit of the mastery loop, but I'll tell you what, and I'm going to tell you this now. For anybody who's got my book, Life on Your Terms.
Yeah, we're going to link to that for everybody. Oh, everybody's got to.
I'll hold this up. It may not show up in here because of the background, but Life on Your Terms. If you go to my name, rexsykes.com/book, B-O-O-K, and they spell my name correctly, what they will do is it'll take them to my website where the book is. And anybody who gets it from Amazon, it's hardcover or paperback, they take their receipt code and put it in. They get I have an online training on the very topic we're talking about, the mastery loop. It's been valued at $497, and I'm giving away as a bonus for anyone who's got the book or who purchases the book. And what it will tell you is essentially is that you start, and we go through unconscious, unconscious, incompetent, you know, those four stages. There's
right.
unconscious incompetence, and then there's conscious incompetence, then there's conscious competence and unconscious competence. Unconscious incompetence means you don't know that you don't know. Conscious incompetence means you know that you can't do it. Conscious competence is where most people are in most things. It's they're talking themselves through it. You hear it about, well, when you learned to drive and you were doing all these things, that's when you were consciously competent. And then when you're driving now, after learning to drive, now you're consciously, or I'm sorry, unconsciously competent. You've mastered driving. So now you can eat a sandwich. You can be talking to somebody. You can be thinking about something and get halfway down the road and not realize that you've been driving because unconsciously you are good at it. You're driving. It still requires some conscious awareness and alertness while you're driving. But something comes up, for example, there's a pothole or a car swerves and you swerve out of the way. You unconsciously swerved out of the way of the pothole or the other car. And you may or may not have succeeded, depending on how fast you were traveling and everything else, but it was your unconscious that took over. You couldn't consciously do it. Consciously try and pick up your bottle of water. You can't do it. The conscious part of it is the intent to pick it up. Picking it up is subconscious. And it knows how to do that because it's done it, right? So it will do whatever it's done the way it's done it. So when you're learning anything, the when you go to grade school or college or anything, they go, okay, welcome to History 101. This is the approach stage. You're learning it for the very first time. You're being introduced to something you didn't know. You were unconsciously incompetent at History 101. So what happens is they start to expose you to this is you may get bewildered. You may get frustrated. You may get confused because you're starting to take in information that you don't know. Like if you're trying to juggle, you get a little bit overwhelmed, or, you know, so you take a break and you juggle again, and you take a break and you juggle again, you eventually get better at it. Why? Because you're drilling. But in the mastery loop, what you'll see, and I'll stop after this, it's like ABC, approach, bewildered, and clear. Everybody wants to go from approach to clear. They want to understand it right away. But the natural process is you approach it, you get bewildered or confused, and some people make that a frustrating experience. And then eventually, if you stay with it long enough, it becomes clear. So in the case of high school or college, you come in, you start learning the material. And about the time that it's getting clear, what do? They test you. And you either know how to take a test or you either know the material. You either know how to take a test and you pass it without knowing the material, or you remember the material, right?
Right.
And then what do? They go, great, now let's move on to the next module.
Right.
And guess what? 85% of everything you learned in college is forgotten 6 months after you graduate. Think about how much you pay to go to college to remember 15 to 20%.
A lot.
Yeah, now it's a substantial amount of debt for most people. But the point is that people they think that the information will transform them. They think that being able to do this stuff will transform them. They think that understanding will transform them, but that's not what transforms them. What transforms them, and this is what I would do in workshops, I say, don't worry about it becoming clear, because if you stay with it, it will become clear. It's like if you walk halfway into a forest and then you keep going in the same direction, what happens?
Get to the other side eventually.
Yeah, you eventually come out of it. So if you start learning something and you stick with it, you'll eventually get to the point where you understand it. You don't understand it up front, just in the same way when you're juggling, it seems hard at first. But the more you juggle, the better you get at it. The better you get at it, the easier it becomes. The easier it becomes, the better you get at it. And so the more you become a juggler. And then one day you're juggling.
Totally.
And then... yeah. And then you look back and go, wow, I didn't think I could do that at first. And it was really seemed really hard. And I almost gave up or whatever, but I stuck with it. Now I'm a juggler. And then there's that point at which not only can you now juggle, but now you're juggling, balancing yourself on a tightrope, sitting on a chair on one leg, you know, juggling a sandwich, a chainsaw, and a bowling ball. I mean, you've gotten creative with it that you never would have thought you could do, you know, when you first started, because it seemed too hard. And what you need to know is that when you juggle, dropping the balls is part of it. So being frustrated or being confused or being bewildered or any of that stuff is part of learning, because the brain is taking in information and then going, I have to assemble it. So hold on, human, while I try and assemble it. And you get bewildered and confused and frustrated. Now you can either help the process along by being open and staying playful and going, you know what, it's cool, I'm learning and I don't know yet what I'm learning, but I'm hanging in there. Or you go, damn it, this is so hard. I don't get this. I'm not good at learning. This is going to be tough. I'm never going to do this.
Yeah.
And more people will complain about it than be excited about it, because when they were kids, they were said, sit in your chair, shut up, and learn how to do this. And then you got graded. And if you didn't get the good grade, you felt bad. So, I mean, they did, you know, we heard no more than any word in the English language by the time we're six or seven. We've heard it like 500,000 times or something in our life. So in order to live the life of your dreams right now, you just recondition yourself. Here's the thing. People don't think they can, but it's a whole, my message is, it's a whole lot easier and a whole lot simpler and a whole lot more available to you than you would ever think it is, because you don't think it is. And that's all you've been conditioned to think, is that it's not easy.
Oh my gosh, this is all so mind-blowing. And it's interesting because it's, I mean, I feel in various ways I've heard you say similar things, but it always, like you were saying with the open loop, planting the seeds in, or reading Think and Grow Rich again, like it's great to feel hit with this knowledge again in a different orchestration that you've put together. And something is really sticking with me about this, Rex. In a really motivational way. I won't say you're a motivational speaker. It's coming from inside of me. But here's what I want to ask about then. What about, because I'm curious, just because you've been in this space for so long, and maybe there's like a demystification that you need to do in some ways. If you're talking about if you're talking about change being something that in the mind often has to get trained, and I'm thinking of the great stories, or I see demonstrations of, I mean, he's the guy, Richard Bandler, co-founder of NLP, who is definitely, I think I've heard you say that you studied with Grant Bandler and Grinder, right? Did you work study with
primarily Bandler? I mean, I've studied with everybody and worked with everybody, but primarily Bandler, and he and I had an association for about 10 years together where he would train for me and I would train for him.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, I heard you say some, I feel like it was you I heard that said you liked Bandler because he was more of a showman, or he resonated with you.
No, very much so. If you want to learn how to deliver a talk hypnotically and entertain and have people laugh, you know, Richard is wonderful for that.
Yeah.
He's not the motivational rah-rah guy, but he can get you feeling motivated by the kinds of stories he tells. You know, he's a master storyteller and he does it very artfully, and that's worth exploring if that's an area that interests you. You know, I mean, because it's about communication, and in that regard, you know, anyone is well served to at least watch him, you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess my question is, when you see him do a demonstration, or even Tony Robbins to a certain extent, and we can even take this back to Milton Erickson, and they are able to say something in such a way that all of a sudden a change occurs, and then the story is always, and then after they heard that metaphor, their entire life was changed. That sounds like it doesn't require the training process. It sounds mystical. It sounds magical. It sounds like this wizard did something to make them change without needing the training. What's the difference between that kind of transformation versus what you're talking about?
Marketing.
Okay. Really? Is that it?
No, but I mean, think about it. You know, how many Olympic athletes do you know that sat in a chair, was hypnotized, and became an Olympic athlete when they couldn't? How many people are brain surgeons by just one day waking up to being brain surgeons? They aren't. They go through training. They go through learning. They go through trial and error. Milton Erickson, the only thing that made Milton Erickson good, well, I shouldn't say the only thing, but was that he was open, curious, persistent, and failed a lot of times. You don't read about his failures, but it was his failures that allowed him to have the successes. I would argue the same thing is true about Bandler or Tony or any of us. You know, if you don't fail a lot, you don't learn much. I have this thing about Hollywood where an overnight success 15 years. That's a staple con in Hollywood. It's not mine, right? Unless you're an 8-year-old child. That's fine. If you're an 8-year-old child, then success is quicker. But Nick Nolte was 35 playing an 18-year-old and had been in the movie business, you know, decades by the time he broke through. And if you look at anybody's IMDb credits, they stop being patron in bar, woman in the elevator, man in cafe, and then they get, Bob or nurse number two. And then finally you become aware of them. And then ultimately they create some name value. There's a process. Everything is a process. Now, can transformation occur in an instant? Absolutely. Does it? Not that often, but it can. So in other words, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to chase the elusive that happens rarely, and there's no reason why you shouldn't? Or are you trying to condition yourself the way anyone who, like Muhammad Ali, any athlete that's done anything, has conditioned themselves? And you know how they condition themselves? They get coaches and mentors and people who can't do what they do, but know how to teach them or train them in doing what they do. And then the coach could do it. In some cases, the coach is a retired athlete or a retired something, but not every coach can do what the person does, but they can coach them well. So it's not just if they could do it, they wouldn't be teaching it, they'd be doing it, you know, which you hear a lot sometimes, those who can't teach. No, sometimes those who can't actually teach better than those who can do it, because a lot of times the people who do it don't know what they're doing that's successful.
Yeah.
There's a famous story, I can't remember who it was, but somebody said, how do you do this particular shot in golf? You know, because I don't golf, so I can't even begin to tell you what there's, but there's top spin, right? Bottom spin, just like on pool, right? So he would say, well, when the golf was up here, you have to move your wrist in a certain way or do something so that the golf club points in a certain direction, right? And everybody would do it and they wouldn't get the results that he was telling them to get. And then somebody watched the video in slow motion and went, that's not what he's doing at all. He's doing something different. And when they figured that out and said, don't do what he's telling you, watch what he's doing and do what he's doing. And then they started to get the same results. Now, how long does it take them to get those results? A long time, but once they got it fairly quickly, because when they started doing what was right, it happened. They could improve quicker. The notion of enlightenment in mysticism or, you know, through meditation is something that can happen in an instant. But if you talk to enlightened people, it's an unfolding. It's a process. It's like, sure, you can have your enlightenment date.
Right.
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 But that's the beginning of the process, not the end point of it. People want to be done doing the work. The work is what we have. I just finished a four-day, it was called the Wind Tour 21. We were honoring Dennis Waitley. It was Bob Proctor. It was Jonas Astaroff. It was Joe Vitale. Sharon Lecter, Marie Diamond. I mean, a lot of people from The Secret, John DeMartini, myself. I mean, it was Mo Rock, Adora Evans. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people, right? We just did 4 days of that. And then yesterday we did a kind of a VIP session with Dennis Waitley. And Dennis wrote The Psychology of Winning back in 1978. And he's now come out with a new book, The New Psychology of Winning. And it's not a rehash of the old book. So it's good. But so Dennis, and one of the things I love about Dennis, he's a man after my own heart. We kind of come up at the same time. But he published, you know, got to be well known and put out, you know, Nightingale Conant tapes and the whole thing, got very well known. Right. Or I did. I worked one-on-one in workshops and things. I mean, that wasn't my path. But the thing that we both worked on is this notion of getting to unconscious competence. So in the tour the other day, he said something which is a reminder for everybody. And I loved what he said, because it's something that we've talked about for a long, long time and people still don't get it. The professional athlete isn't trying to win when they're there. I mean, it is the goal, right? They're trying to medal. They want to get to the other side of the, or they want to do a great dive or whatever. But that's not what they're focused on. They get into state, they get their body, their mind, everything, and then they perform. And what they're doing is remembering their training and their conditioning. they're operating unconsciously. They aren't striving to do something. They're letting their body memory take over. A violinist does the same thing. An actor does the same thing. A stand-up comic makes it look like they've never said this stuff before, but it's highly scripted for the most part. They're remembering. They're bringing forth their competence unconsciously. It's the brain serving them in the same way that that you pick up a bottle of water. They're operating as an excellent athlete. And it's very difficult for some of them to tell you what they do because it's body memory. Yes. And Muhammad Ali said, do I want to train? I hate training. He said, I don't want to get up and run behind a car every day. He said, but I know if I'm going to be the best boxer in the world, I have to train every day. So I get up and I run behind the car and I have a cold, you know, and he had coaches and he had accountability partners who would go, come on, Ma, you know, get out there and run your ass off. And he did, and he excelled, and because he continued to condition himself. If you want the body of a highly sculpted bodybuilder like the Mr. and Miss Olympics have, you're going to put yourself in a chair and hypnotize yourself into doing that? Right. You're going to wake up one day in an enlightened experience and just have that body? I don't think so. It could be possible, but you know what? I don't think so. I don't know many people who just woke up the next day like, look what I did overnight. I now grow 22-inch biceps overnight. So right. How do they do it? They condition themselves. They eat the right foods. They get the right amount of sleep, and they get the right amount of exercise repeatedly, consistently, correctly, for long enough to get that. So they lift that dumbbell repeatedly. The more you do it, the easier it gets. But if you're bodybuilding, they actually add resistance. So they actually add weight or add the number of reps to build the muscle. So think about this. Most people don't want any hardship. They don't want challenges. They don't want struggle. They don't want problems. They don't want to go broke. You look at the people that Napoleon Hill modeled, 520 of them. Most of them, all of them, went broke or had severe hardship before they broke through.
Right.
Look at Oprah Winfrey, raped at 11 years old, hardship, fired from her first job. Jewel lived in her car. Lady Gaga broke through. Jim Carrey, I mean, all is a Sylvester Stallone. Abraham Lincoln had been rejected. How many times did he lose before he became president? Most people who succeed, who become the one, not the 1% of greedy, hoarder, predatory people, you know, that we all hate, those people, but the 1% who are top of their game or the 2% at the top of their game, who have wealth at the end of their life that they leave a legacy to, who have lived their lives happily, who have built a successful business and able to pass it on or contribute value to the world. Those people get there facing incredible hardship, overcoming hardship. They may not like it when they go through it either, but if you avoid it, you won't learn and you won't grow. The Wright brothers, and I use this example constantly, and there are many other examples besides the Wright brothers, but I love it because we wouldn't be flying without them. They were bicycle manufacturers. They weren't aeronautic experts.
Right.
You know, they were bike makers, right? Their own father said, you guys are idiots. You're never going to fly. Give it up. All the experts, all the scientists say this is impossible. Stop. What did they do? They kept trying and they kept failing in the way that Edison failed making a light bulb 10,000 times, it's alleged, right? So they kept failing. They didn't let the failure stop them. They adjusted, they made corrections, they made improvisations, they improvements, they did whatever, they tried it again. And then they got bad, maybe they got feedback or they failed, right? And then they tried it again. They kept this up. And guess what? Gravity didn't stop so that they could fly. And they had to work with gravity. So they had to discover a different principle, and that's the principle of lift. So if you have fashioned a craft in a certain way so that the air travels over it and you reach a certain speed, kind of like EMC equals, you know, E squared, right. You know, you travel a certain velocity with a certain design, then you actually can take off. If takeoff speed, I think, is 90 miles an hour. If you make it to 89 miles an hour, you don't take off.
Hmm.
You make it to 90 miles an hour, you can take off. It's like water doesn't boil at 211. it boils to 212, but you got to get to 212. So they had to keep trying until they got everything right. The design of the aircraft, the speed of the aircraft, and all of this stuff. And then they flew, right? And it was 11 seconds long, and no one showed up for it. The press was like, nah, they're never going to do this, to hell with it, right?
Right.
Now they now you know what they did? They reverse engineered it. They went, we've done it. Now we know we can do it. Now they could improve on it. And guess what? We're at the outer reaches of the solar system because the Wright brothers decided they were going to make it heavier than air aircraft.
Wow, yeah.
And they weren't going to stop because people were ridiculing them. And they weren't going to stop because it was hard or because they failed, you know. And this is the same thing with Milton Erickson or Tony Robbins or Bandler, myself, you, or anybody. If you keep doing it and you fail enough, you'll gain experience and wisdom that you don't get if you have too quick of a success. The reason why a lot of these 8-year-old childs are messed up when they're 15 or 16 year old is not because people have been pouring drugs into them, which sometimes they do. It's because no one ever says no to them once they start getting famous. They have the success, but they don't know how to handle rejection. They don't know, haven't been told no. It's just like a salesperson. If a salesperson immediately, you know, goes out and makes a lot of money, they don't learn the different ways people will tell them no later on. So when they start encountering this, they're going, what happened? I thought I was great. What's going on? I don't know what to do. So the more they struggle in the beginning, the more they learn the feedback mechanism to adjust their behaviors to ultimately be successful. And without that process, it's kind of like building your house in sand.
Yeah.
So you have to.
This is great. It's making me think, I wish there were videos of Tony Robbins failing doing interventions.
Because they won't show them. I mean, you know,
of course.
Very few people are bold enough to show their mistakes, but you know, who cares? I mean, because to inspire people, you show them the successes.
Right.
But that's why all these commercials come on now, go, these are not typical results.
Yes.
And it's not about Tony failing or about anybody failing. What it is that not everybody will do what other people will do. So the results aren't typical. That's why they say it. 97% of the population won't do what's required to succeed in certain areas.
Hmm.
I mean, that's an amazing statistic. Question becomes, are you going to be the 1 or 2% that do, or are you going to be the 97 or 98% that don't? Yeah. And Henry Ford said it wonderfully. He said two statements I love about Henry Ford. One is, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And for most people, if they think they can't, what they need to do is begin to think that it's possible. So they have to go from can't to maybe I could, or maybe it's possible, or because other people have done it, maybe I could do it. Or if I don't know how to do it, I could learn to do it and thereby increment their way up to doing it. There is a process again of learning. I'm learning that, you know what, I may not be perfect at this moment, but I can make little improvements that get me there. I can now juggle three balls. I couldn't juggle any balls a little while ago, but now I can juggle three. I wonder if I could do four. You know? So they progress. But the best statement he ever made was, I never let what I cannot do interfere with what I can do.
That one that you don't hear as much.
No, and most people let what they can't do stop them. Do you know when most people fail?
When?
Before they begin.
That's a good point.
They go, I want to start a business, but I don't have the money. I want to start a business, but I don't know how. I want to start a business, but nobody will help me. I want to start a business, but the banks won't give me a loan. I want to start the business, but taxes are too high. So what's the point? And they don't do it. I mean, whatever it is, I want to have a relationship, but she won't like me, or he won't like me, or I'm not likable, or I have to have the perfect house before I have a relationship, and I don't have one, or I'm not driving the right kind of car. And so they don't do it.
Yeah.
You got to start where you are and get going. So you need to learn how to ride the horse if you want to get to your destination.
Oh, wow. This is wow. I see, I'm not even well versed enough in NLP and hypnosis. I mean, I am pretty well versed, but I kind of let myself go for the ride of everything there. Though I imagine if I were to listen back to everything you've done so far, there'd be probably little nuggets of things and metaphors and things I could take in. And yeah, no, you definitely cinched it together there. Let me ask you this, Rex. For in terms of then the potential of this is the thing I've never understood, because I'm totally with you. I believe in the promise of NLP. I believe in the I mean, L. Michael Hall calls it the spirit of NLP. This that it's an attitude that there was a lot of inspiration about modeling P. Initially, it was about modeling excellence and whatnot. And then as we get a little further down the line, then and I know you study this. People don't talk about design human engineering enough, though I think it's fascinating. In terms of this idea of engineering, in a way, pleasurable states in your mind, bringing pleasure into your life. And if you mentioned some of these themes, giving, having good experience, feeling great about things, really getting to a point where you do. I mean, do you, what happens? Are there people out there you feel that have really mastered their subconscious, that they can wait in a bank line and all of a sudden they can just, oh, well, now that I can think about it or adjust my feelings about this, I can enjoy this. This could be a pleasurable experience. Is that something who,
Of
because I
course.
don't, yeah, that's weird to me. That's weird to me
It
because
doesn't
that.
take, it doesn't take design engineering to do that. It just takes some very simple things. If you start focusing on the good and looking for the silver lining in the dark clouds, if you start practicing gratitude and appreciation for everything in your life, you'll start finding that those little moments are great. Somebody's waiting in a bank line goes, I don't, you know, this sucks, this sucks. I'm waiting in a bank line. Another person will go, this is so great. I get to stand here and not have to do anything for the next couple of minutes. You know, I get this is a break for me. I learned a long time ago that you know, I lived in Los Angeles and would drive, and I always had to beat everybody to the stoplight and then be the first person to pull out and cut and get in the fast lane and do all these things. I was a very aggressive driver at one time. I'm glad to be alive, let's just say. I'm, you know,
Right.
but what I learned, you know, was that, you know, there would be traffic jams in LA all the time. And so I'd be mad. I'd be pounding the steering wheel, fuck, excuse my language, you know, about what's going on. And then I realized at some point that driving was a meditation. That you are where you are, you can't be ahead of where you are. In other words, if I'm here, I can't be here. I can't be there, and I can't be here. And if I'm stuck in traffic with cars all around me, I ain't going anywhere, right? And if the traffic is stopped or going very slow, it's going very slow. So I may have an appointment that I'm not going to be able to make. Well, when I was a young kid and teenager in LA, we didn't have cell phones. You had to get off the freeway and find a pay phone to call somebody and say, I'm going to be hours late because of traffic. Right? So in LA, traffic is not an excuse because everybody knows there's traffic. So if you go, hey, I'm sorry there was traffic, they go, you should have left 3 hours earlier. You know better than that. Shut the hell up. You know, I mean, so traffic's not an excuse. So if you're going to be in traffic, how are you going to use it? Well, you could turn on the radio and listen to music and jam out, you know, while you're sitting there. You could turn on an audio and listen to Napoleon Hill or Rex Sykes or some, or, you know, whomever,
Right.
you know, teaching you, and use it as, you know, the in-car driving university. You could use it as a meditation and go, I am right here. And I learned this because I would get stuck at the beach on Pacific Coast Highway on the continental edge of the United States and be angry and then go, I'm at the beach for crying out loud. I'm stuck at the beach.
Right.
Why am I mad? Because I think I need to be somewhere else. And when I said, you know what? I can't get there any faster. I need to surrender to this moment. I need to let go to this moment. I need to appreciate this moment and be grateful that I'm here. I'm alive. I'm at the beach. Look at the view. You know, I get to relax. I get to reflect. I'll get there in good time. Everything started to change. Everything started to change. beyond NLP, beyond DHE, beyond hypnosis, beyond anything, when I started to practice gratitude and was grateful for everything, and all of my programs, you asked me why my programs were different. I'll tell you why they were different, because every day I made people go at nighttime, I say, write down 25 things for what you're grateful for. In the daytime, multiple times throughout the day, we say, what's good right now? What are you learning right now? What are you discovering right now? What's new for you right now? We put people into situations and play where they would grow. They also learned the techniques and the approaches and the methodologies and all the information and everything else, but in a different way. We danced, we moved around, we had laughter, trance, we had meditation, we had all these things. And you know what? We did cross crawling and brain gym and all this kind of stuff. And people said, you're not taking this seriously. Rex Sykes is playing with people. He's not doing serious NLP stuff or study. And guess what? You know who's doing it now? Everybody's doing it now. They're all cross crawling. They're all playing. They're all high-fiving. They're all patting each other on their back. They're all doing everything we did in the 70s and 80s that everyone said, that's bullcrap. Right. All the big boys, everybody is doing it now. And we were laughed at. I got criticized in a book because I said, we're trying to make the placebo effect conscious, meaning we're trying to use our beliefs in order to develop better. And they went, oh, this is bullshit. This is crap. Look at what he's saying. Now, I guess 20 or 30 years later, now people are going, oh, the placebo effect. How incredible. I had a doctor tell me, my mom gave me a magnetic bracelet because I'd injured my hand. And she sent this thing in the mail and had magnets all over it. And it was around the time that my daughter hadn't been born yet. So my wife and I were going around and the doctors would say, what's that? I said, oh, it's a magnetic bracelet. I hurt my hand. And my mom said to me, see if it would work. They go, oh, it's a placebo. I'd go, hey doc, aren't you supposed to be a healer? And they go, don't you know medicine? And I go, what if this thing healed me? Oh, it can't. It's just a placebo. They didn't even understand what the placebo was. And you know what? It's not the placebo. It's the placebo effect. A placebo is just an inert substance or an amulet or, you know, this could be a placebo. Yet people who believe in voodoo get cursed and can die. I developed the attitude activator in cells all around the world, you know, this process. And it's a process, a hypnotic process audio program. Because back in the 80s and the 90s, we came out with the attitude. I was developing the process in the 80s. But the point is, at that time, there wasn't many research on visualization. There wasn't much research on placebo. There wasn't much research on attitude or any of this stuff. But Travis Air Force Base did a study with 152 cancer patients and determined that attitude was the number one predictor for how well a person did when it came to their belief or their attitude about the treatment that they were undergoing. So if they thought the treatment was going to work, they were more apt to have it work. And if they thought the treatment wouldn't work, it was more apt to not work. Since that time, there's something like over 40,000 studies that validate this. And Bernie Siegel and Norman Cousins, you know, laugh your way to health. What we know about the brain and about our beliefs and about positive thinking is this. Why you want to learn how to ride that horse. When you think negative and pessimistically, it's an electrochemical process inside the brain that squirts hormones. And it either squirts hormones that make you feel good and make you feel and increase your well-being, or it squirts hormones that stress hormones like cortisol and the other things that are debilitating and can create disorder or disease. So either you're more positive or less positive. It has a profound effect on your ability to heal and your ability to have good health and your longevity. Attitude is the number one predictor of success in healing, health, and longevity. The better your attitude, the longer you potentially will live. The better your attitude, the easier it is to heal and to have good health. But as it turns out, attitude is the number one predictor in all areas of your life. You're going to go into a relationship. If you have the right attitude, it's much better than if you have a bad attitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to make money, you better have a good attitude. So I came out with the attitude activator because people need to learn how to activate their attitude. And it's not just being pumped up and going, rah, I can do anything. It's not about mode. It's the attitude of curiosity. It's a loving attitude. It's being serene. It's being calm and questioning. It's being fascinated. It's being playful. It's being delighted. It's having laughter. It's being sensual. It's being confident and speak, you know, it's all sorts of different kinds of attitudes. So having the ability to be able to move from one thing to another thing that in a way that serves you is one of the healthiest things you can do for yourself, to get over being stuck and going into something new that benefits you and squirts all the wonderful chemicals that make you feel good and move you closer. That's why you learn to ride the horse, because then the horse will take you in the direction. It will do what it does in the same way that an athlete will do what they do. They will, in that moment, perform to the top of their ability. That's what your subconscious mind does all the time. And lastly, because I said it's there to keep you alive and it's there to keep you consistent, it streamlines everything. What does that mean? It means it stereotypes. It lays down new neural pathways so that you don't have to learn to do the same things over and over again. Because if you had to learn how to use a phone every day, you would never do anything else. You'd be too busy learning everything you already learned. So it learns, it streamlines, it makes it unconscious. And then that little tiny portion of, by the way, you know that the you see these posters where there's an iceberg and the tip is above the water and then you see the under and they go, yes. The conscious mind is the tip and the subconscious mind is the bottom. I disagree with that.
Oh.
The tip is the conscious mind and everything else is the subconscious mind. It's the water, it's the air, it's everything else. It's the beneath. It's because we don't live in a vacuum. We live in a universe that's ripe with other minds. We, you know, you can say we have a conscious, a subconscious, and a superconscious if you want, but everything else is part of it. How you interact with the world is part of it. So you're training the conscious mind is good at telling the subconscious mind what to do. But if you want to change what you've been doing, which is already habits, because those neural pathways are already down, you have to recondition, you have to retrain it, you have to train the horse. Or you have to learn to be the rider so that you can ride the horse.
Yeah. And
most people, they just say, I'm looking for that magic pill, the magic wand. I want somebody to hypnotize me. I want to take the one course that will change my life forever. I want to go to that person and they'll just say the right words and I'll be completely different. It's kind of like, how many times do you have to fill up your car? How many times do you have to eat? How many days do you sleep?
Right.
Life is a process. Get over the fact that you want it fast and get over the fact that you can't have it and realize you can have it. If you plant a seed today for roses, they'll grow. If you nurture them, they'll grow, right? But it's going to take however long it takes to grow.
Yeah.
And so lastly with that, using the same metaphor, if you plant an oak tree, right? You plant an acorn, you get the oak tree. But here's the cool part that a lot of people don't think about. Inside that acorn is the potential for the oak tree. Because the acorn literally splits apart, the seed actually dies, you know, it germinates. And guess what? An oak tree rises from it. You don't get corn, you don't get roses, you don't get peas or celery, you get an oak tree. So inside that acorn is an oak tree, but you can cut the acorn open and you'll never see the oak tree. It's the potential. Inside you and I is this incredible potential that needs to be planted. And in order to be planted, you have to maybe prepare the soil and then plant it. And then the seed has to die. It has to release. It has to let go so that it can sprout. And then it travels through darkness until it breaks through the soil. And when it breaks through the soil, it's like a little tiny sapling or whatever that eventually grows up into the mighty oak tree. And that's what you and I do. And we're in that process all along. And yet some people just don't think they are. And so they never recognize where they are in the process. And so they kind of keep it at bay. And they keep doing the same old things over and over again, wondering why things don't change. And of course, that's been called the definition of insanity.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and again, you've given so much of your time, so I don't want to go too much longer, keep you going. But I have to figure, I have to put this out there, Rex, because I'm really, I've been listening to you and going, wow, yeah, the same thing he did to me at the Super Learner seminar, he did here with NLP and hypnosis, which is, I have a, and again, it's, I, we were talking about this before we recorded. I buy into the magic of it. I, or at least I love it. I love talking about it. And even the technical stuff, the idea of whatever an instant induction is, going through that, I think it's a magical thing. I think the subconscious is magical. I also think the ability to plant a seed, a suggestion in someone's mind that later comes up and transforms their life is a magical, I put that in quotes, experience. But this entire interview, I mean, I've talked about design human engineering, I've talked about hypnosis, I've referenced great change work, and you've managed to bring it very much down to the practical, down to the human, down to the understanding. Down to the usable in a way that's accessible, that doesn't set it in the world of lofty marketing and high-level ideas. And even in your book, you have this book, which is really, I mean, the reviews on this are amazing. Again, we're going to link to it, A Life on Your Terms, which people say, well, life on your terms, live the life you want, which is a really clear, demystified approach to the law of attraction. So here's my question for you. Law of attraction also sounds a little mystical, also sounds a little out there. What is, do at the end of the day, do you just look at spirituality different than other people? Or if it's not that, what is the role of magic and fantasy in any of this change work? Because, you making it seem simple is what's magical to me. But I'm curious what your thoughts are on the relationship between the mystical, the spiritual, and you live in LA, so people buy into all this woo-woo stuff, and really getting it into people's minds and hearts in a way that actually does some good for the world.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, that means a lot to me. And the reviews on the book mean a lot to me. I mean, I'm really pleased with the way it's being received and the people who use it. If somebody reads it and puts it down, I'm not that impressed. If somebody actually does something and changes their life using that, I'm pleased. When people come to my workshops, I always said, look, I think of myself as a quarterback, not the star quarterback, but the guy who passes you the ball or hands off the ball so that you can run home the touchdown, or score. I'm trying to help you get down the field so that you can win. And to that extent, that's the end of the metaphor. You do it. I can't run it for you. Magic and mystery and awe are incredible, and life in itself is a mystery. And there's so much to be appreciative of, and to go out and look at a sunset or a sunrise and just go. I mean, where I woke up to how incredible things are, I mean, my blog today, for example, I go, you do realize we emit light and we do produce energy, and if they calculate it, it's like, a 100-watt bulb, is the body maybe, activity. But I mean, think about that for a second. We're generating electricity. They can now measure our brain waves. They can measure our heart waves. They know that the heart actually extends beyond us in terms of vibration further than our brain does. Brain waves are fleeting. Emotions are slower. So therefore, you have the thought, it goes like this, but the feeling takes a while. This is why people take a long time to get excited, or they take a long time to get unwound. Because the body's chemistry is different. It's a heavier thing. It's your physical stuff. The thought is fleeting. You talked about the law of attraction. Somebody said today, they said, I'm in my 30s. I've never written down a goal. And somebody told them to write it down. I said, well, you know why you do that, don't you? No, I said, because you're now taking the invisible and making it visible. That's the first step in making it concrete, is to put it on paper. What existed in here is now out on paper. You can actually put it somewhere. It's like making a map. The map represents the area, but when you actually start mapping, now you're doing something. When you start building a plan or creating a building and going, here's where we're going to put the plumbing, and here's where the electrical outlet is, and here's where all these things are, you start seeing, you're starting to make what just existed in the mind real. That's all magical. I mean, that is all so miraculous. That is so incredible. I was about 25 years old, And I was lying down on my floor. I used to put tubular bells on and my head between speakers and, you know, and go off into the distance. And I'm lying on the floor and I'm thinking, I'm 25 years old or about, and I've walked on this planet for a quarter of the century. And I never thought to thank my feet. I've stubbed my toes. I've twisted my ankles. I've done a lot of knee and damage to my legs. I never thought that my legs, my feet carried me on this planet every day of my 25 years. And I was never grateful for it. And I just went, how could I not appreciate that? So I started to thank my toes, you know, and my joints and my soul and the top and my shin and the sole and the heel and the tissues and the fluids and the muscles. And the, I mean, I just got into this whole thing where I got as meticulous as I could, thanking every aspect of my ankle and the this and the heel and the, you know, and I worked my way up. I worked through my entire body. I lay there for hours going through this entire thing. And I came out of this thing just completely blown away. If you and I realized the infinitesimal amount of brain power we have, our subconscious mind is billions of times stronger, more powerful than our conscious mind, billions of times. The amount of neural connections that we could make that they claim that because of the trillions of cells in our body, the trillions of neurons, are infinitesimal, that there's more, the ability to make more neural connections than there are atoms in the universe. I don't know how they calculate that. But I go, wow. I mean, that's something that we've yet to even begin to tap into. If you realized all the, if you could consciously, and I can't, I'm telling you, if you could consciously appreciate all the fact that you have cells right now that are doing all sorts of things simultaneously and sequentially, and millions of them are dying and millions of them are arising, and millions of them are doing their functions and splitting and they're doing this and they're squirting chemical, you know, I mean, all this stuff that's going on. And your heart is beating, your eyes are blinking, you're salivating, and you're processing your food, and you're getting ready to eliminate toxic, you know, you're eliminate what you don't need. Your body is holding you upright. Your blood is coursing. All of the stuff that's going on right now, you can't even lift a bottle of water consciously, but you can't even begin to appreciate all of this majesty that is happening inside this bag of skin and bone. I mean, we have these carbon-based miracles. And we're on a planet that's rotating around the sun at like, what, 60,000 miles an hour it takes a year to get around the sun? I mean, yeah. You know, it's just unbelievable how incredible things are. So you're part of that. You are part of that. You aren't an insignificant part of that, Greg. You are part of all of it. And what you see in the world is your the world needs you who you are. They don't need another Elvis or another Jim Carrey or another Oprah. You know, they don't need another, you know, Lincoln. They need Greg. They need Rex. They need Sally. They need whoever it is to be who they are, because we are this incredible expression of consciousness on the planet. And we don't even realize how incredible we are because our conscious mind can't figure all of this stuff out. It's limited in that scope. But what it is like a rudder on an immense, incredible sailing vessel. It can direct that vessel like the rider can direct the horse. And so it's a tiny thing that has the ability to direct an immense thing. And I think Napoleon Hill, I like Napoleon Hill so much because he said it so eloquently, but mystics have been saying it since the dawn of humankind. Wallace Waddle said it, which was the basis of The Secret. Robert Collier, Brown Landon. I mean, there's so many people, you know, if you go back through it, NLP is, you know, we say, oh, we got it from this and that. And that. You go back, you look at Napoleon Hill. He was the first modeler by comparison to NLP people. He looked at 520 rich people. He said, here's what you do. He called it a philosophy. He actually built a model. So do these things and you will have this kind of success. And he actually didn't say you will have it. He said, you can have it. He said, if the mind can conceive it and you can believe it, you can achieve it. I mean, that's the catchphrase. But when he was asked why he didn't say will, he said, because I don't know what you're going to do with it. That's up to you. If you will do it, you can have it. But if you won't do it, then you can't have it. You know, that kind of. But he did 520 of the richest people in the planet, said, here's what they did. And he came up with a philosophy, 13 principles of the law of success, actually is a bigger body of work, said, You got to know your purpose. Know your purpose. Why are you on the planet? What is your purpose? What is your definite chief aim for being here? What do you want to accomplish? Know what that is. If you want money, it can be money. If you want happiness, it can be happiness. If you want a relationship, it can be a relationship. But know what your purpose is. Know and know how to contribute to people. That will help you in a great deal. Secondly, have a burning desire to make that purpose happen, to come true. So if you want money, then you got to obsess about it. It needs to be what he called a white hot obsession. If you want love, you have to obsess about it. If you want to have a better home, obsess about it, at least for a little bit, right? If you want to help feed the hungry, obsess about it, because you're not going to do it if it doesn't mean anything to you. So have a big enough why that is like scary, you know, wow, I could be, you know, I could feed everybody on the planet. That's a big why. Okay. I am obsessed about it. Then you need to develop the certainty. He called it faith, but it's literally the certainty that I'm going to do it come what may. No matter what, no matter who stops me, like the Wright brothers, we are going to fly. And with all the failure and all the feedback and all the criticism and all the laughter and all the resistance from everybody else, they stuck with it. Then he said, what's the next step? Auto-suggestion. What is auto-suggestion? It's repeating it consistently, correctly for long enough until you believe it. He said, you got to fashion your mind so that you believe it. You got to actually trick your own mind into believing that you can do it and that you will do it. Not that just you can, but that you will. And then not just that you will, but that you are doing it. Because if you will, it's always off that, you know, you never get around to it. And then you persist until you do it. So if you want to run a marathon, if your goal is to be, I'm going to do 100K and I'm going to run it. And then you think about it, you train and you do all those things. And then you do it, you know, you go, I'm going to finish. And then you have to keep going until you actually finish. Because if you stop before you finished, you didn't finish the marathon. And a lot of people won't start the marathon because they don't think they can. And this is the cool part, you know. So there's so many things that we can do and so much. And what is magic? Who was it that said it? Arthur C. Clarke, was he the one that said, you know, any sufficient technology is considered magic? I mean, I'm massacring
indistinguishable from magic, I believe.
From like magic, that. Right. So in other words, magic has a process. You know, what you see in the end result, somebody waves a wand, boom, there's a flower blooms, but there's a process in it. I mean, an invisible process in it that we don't get to see because we have the fairy tales, we have the Aladdin's lamp stuff, we have all the metaphors and analogies and bedtime stories of things happening like magic. But magic is your everyday life. Magic can be every single moment of your life. I say this, make all of your moments magical, memorable, miraculous, and magnificent, because they can be. And if you expect your day to go well, it will go well. So if you believe, or if you consider everything a blessing, then everything is a blessing. So you should celebrate everything. So gratitude is the thing that opens people up, and it makes them appreciate who they are. Viktor Frankl, who was in a concentration camp, wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning, said, you can imprison me, but you can't take away my imagination. Gandhi said, essentially, saying, you can beat me, you can torture me, you can do all this stuff, but you can't take away my heart and my mind. And in Lincoln, who, you know, failed and failed and failed, became president. You know, Mother Teresa went out and served people, and everybody goes, oh, you know, Mother Teresa had nothing. She had more power than most people can ever imagine. She could walk into any government office anywhere in the world and be received with open arms. And yet she didn't seem to have two nickels she could rub together. Gandhi immobilized the entire British government and had them brought to their knees in India by mobilizing 200 million people peacefully without ever firing a shot or ever resisting the government. That's magic.
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, wow. Rex, there is so much here. And look, I mean, everybody's got to check out this book. Live life on your terms. Create the life you want. Get that bonus, get the mastery loop, as well as rexsykes.com, where tons of interesting courses. I mean, even look, you can get the ultimate NLP practitioner home study course, which over the years, I mean, I've seen it talked about as the home study course on NLP to get. But you have to, I mean, you have sales courses in here, you have stuff on accelerated learning, like specifically that kind of the Einsteinian kind of genius technique. You have a lot. I have loved over the past couple of years seeing all your stuff migrate to this online format, and as well as, I mean, you're out there all the time. You're on Clubhouse. What I love is how much you're still giving. It's as an entertainer. As someone who's been in the entertainment industry, and you know, like me, you also have a background in magic and mentalism and all kinds of stuff. I mean, I know that there's a part of me that's always looking for the next thrill, that's looking for the next new technology, that's looking for the next thing. How has it remained interesting for you? Even after, you know, talking about directed questions, after all these years, I'm sure you've told similar metaphors. I'm sure you've referenced Einstein before, and you're on this podcast and you're sharing a very similar message in a different way. How have you kept it alive for yourself?
It's a fascinating question. I'm not even really sure how to answer that, because I could answer it in a multitude of ways. But let me say that, you know, we've talked what some people might think are lofty or complex topics here. You know, I've gone off on these things and brought them back at different times, you know, but the whole point is that it's really a whole lot simpler and easier. And if you, it's like, how do you eat an elephant? You do it bite by bite.
Yeah.
You know? And what the book does and what I help you do is set up wins along the way in tiny little pieces so that you can constantly win and constantly play, and not get frustrated during the process, and to understand how to approach, like we've been talking about, resistance or hardship. And again, you know, I have to answer, how do I keep it exciting or new or fun or enjoyable, you know, or however, you know, people.
Yeah, I mean, and I want to give you credit for create. I mean, that is a good point, to know all this stuff about learning early on in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, it almost is like Joe Vitale called you the motivational mind reader. I mean, that is pretty amazing that you had the insight back then to know that this stuff was this powerful.
Well, I mean, I, you know, my life, I mean, and I write a little bit about it in the book, you know, I've had, you know, numerous crisis points in my life. I mean, big devastating disappointments or failures or, you know, life-threatening situations. I don't write about more than one of them in the book, you know, because it's really, the book is not about me. It's about what you can do using the material that I present in the book. So there's a little bit on me. And then there's stories about other people, either people who I've interacted with or people who I know, or stories of other people who succeed in one way or other, who overcome difficulty. And then there's the other parts of the book, the meat and the stuff, the learning points. I mean, you learn through all of it. But I started, you know, my parents stuck me in acting lessons when I was four, and I took ballet and tap and jazz and acrobatics from the time I was three.
Wow.
Because they wanted me to be well-rounded, not because they wanted me to be any of these things, but they did. And at four or five, I saw the movie Houdini, and I wanted to be Houdini. I thought he was great. And so I loved the Marx Brothers, and I thought comedy was great.
Yes.
And I would transcribe movies.
Me too. You know, and I love the Marx Brothers. Yes.
Yes, indeed. And one of my favorite comedians was Wheeler and Woolsey, who nobody knows, but then AMC came along and TCM came along and started replaying their movies. And so people got to know who they are. But I would transcribe all the comedy, you know, and so I would learn. But at the age of six, I was raised Catholic. And at the age of six, I wanted to be a mystic. I was like, there's this priest does this weird thing, and they shake this incense and they walk around. And there's all this pomp and circumstances. It's all about God. And you know, and I had these Bible stories when I was a kid, and I was like, I want to be that guy who's got the connection with God. And I didn't know what to do about it, you know, other than the church would tell me I had to do certain things. So I asked my mom to start reading me books like the Bhagavad Gita and Napoleon Hill and Khalil Gibran and, you know, Eastern philosophy and things like that. And so, you know, as a young kid, I just was always kind of mystified. I wanted to do two things. I wanted to perform and I wanted to be connected to God in some way. You know, I wanted to be mystic. And my life, that's what I've done. I act and I work in the movie business or show business side of it. And I have a very spiritual side. I meditate. I for, you know, a number of years lived in a commune, and I've traveled the world teaching different practices and ran a meditation center and work as a hypnotist and a therapist at one time and a neurolinguistic programmer. And, you know, I've never really had a real job other than to do what I do, you know, either be in the movie business. There was a time when I helped my family out when they needed somebody in a store. So I traveled to go help them in the store and did sales and swept the store, vacuumed the rugs because that they needed help at that time. But I really, you know, haven't really worked for anybody other than as an actor or as a teacher. I've taught at the university and different things. It's all part of an incredible journey of which I'm just absolutely grateful for. And when I was 25, before I did that grateful thing, I had been, you know, misprescribed some pills that should have killed me from a skydiving accident that I tried to hide from a girlfriend, and it cost me the relationship and it cost me my memory. It cost me all of my friends. It cost me my career. And at some point I literally tried to kill myself, and I failed at killing myself. I jumped out of a window. I landed on my head on grass, a two-story window, but I landed on my head on grass, nothing to break my fall. I mean, just boom, like that. And I fell over and went, shit, I didn't even kill myself. And I ran around the house trying to get back into my apartment where I jumped out to jump out again, and I was locked out. And my parents were there at the time, so they kind of stopped me and they realized something was going on. And they thought, well, we gotta put this guy in a, you know, get him some mental help or something. So they kind of locked me in my apartment and what I just jumped out of. And they took the distributor cap off my car so I couldn't flee in the middle of the night. And I started to have to face what I was going through because I didn't know. I had all this stuff happen. I literally had amnesia for a long period of time because of drug-induced amnesia. I didn't know what I had done or anything. I couldn't remember anything. When I started to wake up to it, I started to feel really bad. And then I started to drink and I started to compound things. And then, you know, so I tell you all this because, I mean, people have gone through far worse things than I have. But at that point, when I was 24, 25 years old, and I felt like I'd lost everything and my life was over and I wanted to die, I locked myself in my apartment. I started to meditate again because I hadn't in a while. I started to do hypnosis and affirmations and do what I knew. And that's where I came up with the directed questions, because I started to realize I needed to direct my mind in a different way. And I stumbled on it while in the apartment. But I emerged from the apartment about 6 weeks, 7 weeks later, and I came out kind of as a toddler. You know, I didn't burst out like Superman. I was like, but I had wanted to get back and claim back my friends and win back my career and be in life. And I realized at that point, you know what? I have gone through a lot. I tried to kill myself. I couldn't. And I had since then lots of other experiences where I almost went off a cliff. Somebody threatened to kill me. You know, all these different things were happening. And I went, maybe I'm supposed to be here. Maybe there's something about living here. Not that God is going, Rex, you're here and I've got this purpose for you. I'm not that egotistical to say God talks to me and says, okay, here's your mission. Go do this. But I felt like that there was a purpose for my life, and that I was lucky to be alive, and that if I were going to be alive, that I should really fully live and not live the way I had been in the last year or so, where I just hurt and I was in pain and I suffered and I didn't help other people to feel good. And even before that, as an actor, it was always about me versus them, or could I make it? And if somebody else was successful, I felt bad because it wasn't me being successful. And I wasn't really celebrating their success because I was envious or jealous. And I just suddenly, it was all of it became unimportant. It was, I now needed to go and let that go. let go of the pain, let go of the suffering, let go of all the reasons, let go of everything, and start to learn how to celebrate life and to live as simply and as happily and as easily as I can. And you can't chase happiness. It's not about getting to be happy someday. It's like, what are you doing now? Someday I will leave the planet, right? I will transition in whatever way, shape, or form. Between now and then, I want the journey to be exciting. What people don't, I have a quote, one of my own quotes is, exploration is a doorway to adventure. And awareness and curiosity is the key. I mean, that's what opens it up if you're curious. If you tomorrow say, I'm going to go on an adventure in the Amazon, you know, like you think Indiana Jones an adventure, right? A lot of hardship in that adventure in an Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what makes it the adventure, right? It's the highs and lows of the roller coaster. It's all part of the ride. An adventure means that it's an adventure. So if life is an adventure, then it means there's all sorts of moments. There's going to be boring moments, happy moments, thrilling moments, scary moments, angry moments, hurtful moments, hateful moments. It's all the ride. Why not just appreciate it all? Yeah. That, for me, is one of the simplest ways to have magic appear in your life and to transform, instead of trying to hypnotize yourself into being somebody that you aren't and all that. Condition yourself with gratitude. Practice gratitude every day. Practice optimism every day. Practice being positive every day. And guess what? It gets easier. And the easier it gets, the better you get at it. And the better you get at it, the easier it gets. And guess, pretty soon, it's a habit. And you don't know 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years from now, how it's going to transform. But one day you turn around, you look back and go, oh my God, look at how the distance I've traveled, how far I've come, and what a beautiful ride it's been. Because you can always connect the dots looking back, but you can't necessarily connect the dots looking forward because it hasn't unfolded yet. So if you appreciate it all, it's all. And one story that's always spoken to me is that there were all these disciples of different gurus gathered, and the one set of disciples said, my guru is the most powerful guru in the world. He can part the seas and walk through the parted sea. Another one said, oh, no. My guru is far more than that. He can rain down fire from the sky and create fires anywhere and everywhere, lightning bolts. Another one said, oh, no. My guru is the biggest. He's my master. He can take wind and just level anything he wants with a blowing wind. And the last one said, my master is truly the most powerful master. He eats when he's hungry. He sleeps when he's sleepy.
Rex Sykes, thank you so much for coming on this show. This has been such a great ride. And now I feel like the horseback riding lessons that my parents paid for when I was five were meaningful in some way. So
yeah,
thank you for redeeming Greg, that.
Well, Greg, it's been a pleasure. You know, it's been fun. I appreciate the opportunity and the time that we've been able to spend together just discussing these concepts and principles, because really, after all, it's really quite simple. And if people just start enjoying life becomes more enjoyable.
Yes. Thank you again. Love that you're still out there doing all of this. Such a great message, such great teachings. Rex, we'll talk again real soon. I really appreciate it.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Rex Sykes, thank you for coming on. What a legend. What a darn legend. Blew my mind a lot. And it was so simple. The simplest things are the ones that blow my mind the most, sometimes. Like Velcro. You ever see how Velcro works? Okay, that kind of scared me a little bit. I didn't realize I had these little claw things on my shoes when I was a kid. I think I would have freaked out more if I... Okay, you know what? I need to bring myself to a more positive attitude over Velcro. I want to thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. I want to thank you for listening to this. Stay cool, tie your shoes.